Lake Whatcom.
Morning. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Douglas Shepherd. I'm counsel for Lake Auckland Ware Road. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for my argument. The issues before the court today that I'd like to focus on is the intent of the parties in the 1931 deed, which is the green portion of this
counsel,
survey.
Can I ask a preliminary question? It doesn't appear that any judgment was ever entered by the trial court. We have findings of fact from the first trial and findings of fact and conclusions of law after the second trial, but we don't appear to have ever had a judgment entered. Could you tell me if there was one, and if there wasn't one, why we can hear this appeal?
I believe there was one. There was a judgment entered for a money amount, but I haven't even looked at that issue, so I guess.
Well, if you haven't looked at it, why don't you continue on? But we couldn't find it.
It might not have been designated in the clerk's papers. I apologize to the court. The 1931 deed, I believe, should be analyzed by the trial court and should be analyzed by this court under Brown with 130 Washington 2nd 430. The 1931 deed had not...
Question for you about that as well. In 1977, Judge Swedberg made conclusions of law about the 01 deed and the... 31 deed, or 30 whatever it is. The Court of Appeals, in its opinion, addressed just the 01 deed. The Supreme Court, in its decision, appears to have only accepted review with respect to issues relating to the 01 deed, and the subsequent decree entered by the court on remand only addresses the 01 deed. So why isn't the conclusion of law that was entered in January of 77 still binding on the parties and their successors and interests with respect to the Byron deed?
I would hope it is. I mean, it was determined to be a fee interest. I don't know what was intended by the parties when they entered their consent decree and the consent judgment. The court indicated at this case that somehow all those issues have been decided earlier by the consent decree. I actually believe that the decision of the trial court in the 1931 deed, in fact, is binding. I didn't raise it on this issue because the deed is so clear on its face that it's a warranty deed that describes property granted without any conditions, not for railroad purposes, not for right-of-way. I believed incorrectly this was going to be a fairly easy case to get the court to determine that the 1931 deed was in fact a grant of property and not an easement, and that defense would be removed. During the course of the litigation, we got deep into the intent of the 1980 consent decree, which I believe the Scott Alar Wenz parties had no right to raise because they were not part of that. I believe they realized that and reopened the 2007 case. So I, to be quite frank with you, objected to the 2007 or 1970 case being reopened. But I, once it's reopened, would have to tell all the panel, I'm not sure what is the final decision from the 1970.
There was an order consolidating cases. Was there ever any order entered that vacated the decree that was entered on remand?
No, there was an order entered consolidating cases and substituting Scott, Alar, and Wenz for the original property owners without notice to the original property owners.
So there is nothing that vacates the provision. And you call that a consent decree. What is there in the record that tells us that's something other than the court's determination of the relief to be granted following the mandate from the Supreme Court?
There was no hearing, and it was signed by counsel for all the parties as agreed to, is the way I believe you get to a consent decree. And so the issue became whether or not Scott, Alar, and Wenz were third-party beneficiaries of that consent decree, and I believe they were not. And we found out how difficult the decree was as we try to have it attached to the property because we started arguing about whether federal law did or did not appear, and we started getting orders from the trial judge on when we could or could not do maintenance and what could or could not be filled in on the tracks. I have to confess to the panel that I was somewhat excited about the fact that they substituted parties and opened the old decree, because there is a Court of Appeals rule that indicates the court can decide the 1901 deed at this point based upon the present law, and probably comes as no
surprise. That rule gives us authority to ignore the opinion of the Supreme Court?
I figured that question would be asked. It depends on how you read it. It says you can decide the case.
People in Olympia, they'll be very surprised that there is any rule anywhere that gives us authority to reverse the decision they've made.
I think they would be surprised, too, but I think the...
And they adopted that rule.
That was going to be my argument. They adopted the rule that said that this panel could decide the issues in front of it based upon the law at the time of the later review. The Supreme Court adopted that rule. What would they want you to apply? It turns out this probably is the only case that I've been involved in my time where Division One was correct the first time around. It got reversed by a fairly short decision, and every case, including Brown thereafter, indicates that Division was correct, that this was not an easement. This was, in fact, a deed, a grant of property, and we find out now the problems caused by a decision that it's not a deed, but it's an easement, and we find out the problems of what happens when there is a consent decree, when they try to resolve it, or an order by the court. If we call it an order by the court, I believe in 1980 it violated federal law. The court cannot take over management of this railroad and decide how you will use the easement and when you can use the easement and when you can repair the railroad and when you can't repair the railroad. So if it was not a consent decree, then the 1980 orders by the court would be a violation of federal law.
If we agree with you that the 30s deed granted a fee interest in property, how would that affect the relief the trial court granted?
Then its decision as to how you use the easement would not apply to the green section. Its decision that the defendants could continue to have a fence on our property would be wrong. And its decision that they can somehow manage how we get on and off the railroad at that location would be wrong. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Counsel, my name is Douglas Roberts, and I'm appearing on behalf of the respondents, ALAR. Let me address the first question, because there's a little misperception of the record. There was a trial before Judge Swedberg. The entirety of that judgment was appealed, and it's noted in my brief of the specific...
It was appealed, but if you read the Court of Appeals decision, they don't appear to address the Byron deed.
I think you're correct there.
But they do recite in the facts of the opinion that the deed conveyed a fee interest.
And if you look to the pleadings, both parties had a briefing both to the 01 deed and a 31 deed.
We received the briefs that were filed in that case and reviewed them. And it appears that the Supreme Court only took review of the issue of the 01 deed. And if you look at what Judge Swedberg did on remand, he only appears to have addressed issues involving the 01 deed, which strongly supports the view that the Byron deed determination by the trial court in January of 77 remained intact, to wit that deed conveyed a fee interest.
While I understand that interpretation, I'd have to respectfully disagree because...
What's wrong with it?
Because the parties appealed all issues to both courts. The parties briefed all issues to all courts, and then it was reversed. The judgment did not say we reverse only to the 1901 deed. It said the decision was reversed. More importantly, when it came back on remand, Judge Swedberg did address and said, I don't have to address the 1931 easement at this point. Judge Snyder...
Did he say that in the decree?
No, he didn't say it in the decree. It is mentioned...
How do we know that?
Because it's mentioned in one of the portions of the decision that came out, and I can't think of where it is right now. But I think,
is what you're describing in the record before us?
I believe it is, and I do not recall exactly where it is. But I think the important part here is Judge Snyder had it right. We were not in asking for it to be reopened. That was language put in by the defendant. It was not the judgment that was reopened, just the case. Judge Snyder reviewed the entire record and came to the conclusion that we have to, that this is the new trial court, we can't change what happened in the 77-1980 Veach v. Culp decision. What we have to address are the things that were not decided in the court in the previous matter, and the Supreme Court did not decide the 1931 easement. Probably what's also important,
have you looked at the petition for review to see if review was granted by the Supreme Court on any issue besides the 01 deed?
I have to say that I have reviewed the petition on review, but I do not recall if it was limited to the 01 decree. I do not believe it was, but I can't recall specifically.
But you agree that the decision doesn't describe at all or address anything related to the Byron deed?
That is correct. And I would also say that both parties did brief that.
They briefed that to the Court of Appeals.
And I would have to also say that what's important here is on remand, when it came back down, there was no other decision other than the trial court said, the Supreme Court said the trial court was reversed. They didn't say reversed only to this portion of it. The trial court was reversed. But more importantly, let's look at what the situation really is. When you're looking at that Byron grant, that's the 1931, the Lake Whatcom Railroad asserts that the trial court, that would be Mr. Judge Snyder, made no attempt to analyze the deed under the factors outlined in Brown versus State. Nothing could be further from the truth. The trial court, in its June 29th decision, said this means that this court must review the Byron deed to see what it does mean. He went on to say, Mr. Shepard did a very good job of putting up all the factors considered and looking at, and then he quotes Brown, Ray, Kershaw, and then the Yakima case. He goes then on for 7 pages to analyze all the particulars of why the 1931 deed is an easement and not a fee. What's important here is that was never briefed on appeal in the opening brief. The references to those case law was not in reference to that case in their opening brief. Instead, all it did was reference, this is why under RAP 2.5 the law has changed. I disagree. I believe the law is still the same. You look at the intent of the parties. Judge Snyder got it right. Judge Snyder was absolutely correct. You look at the Swan factors that Ray and Brown still apply, and he went through and listed down each one and said, this is how you read it back and forth. Probably most significant is if the Supreme Court identified the 1901 deed as being an easement, why would that property owner then grant a fee when the only purpose is to relocate that easement? It does not make logical sense.
Is the grantor the same in both deeds?
I do not believe so. One was under Zobrist, one was Byron.
So if A does something, that doesn't tell us very much about B's intent, does it?
It would, because it references the same purpose. It was for the purpose of the railroad line. If that section had not been included in that deed, if it had said something such as, and I give you this much more space, the area in the green that's been taken away, then that inference may be appropriate. But since the second grantor said, but I will grant you that for relocating the line, that second grantor must know the existing line is what it is, which at the intent the Supreme Court identified it is an easement. That intent must have continued.
How do we know that in 1931, Mr. Byron would know what the Supreme Court would do in the early 80s?
The after-the-fact decision by the court did not establish an after-the-fact occurrence. What the Supreme Court did is look back to 1901 and said, what are the intent of the parties then?
Byron conduct some investigation of intent? What was it that would have told Mr. Byron in 1931 what the intent was in 01? We know that the Supreme Court made that information available when it published its decision, but what was available to Mr. Byron to allow us to draw the inference that you're arguing?
It would have been all the information that the Supreme Court and the trial court in 1977 reviewed, analyzing that this was a railroad line, there was no other assertion of a fee interest that had limited language in the deed. Now we have to know. I don't know who Mr. Byron was. I don't know whether he was a lawyer or a farmer. Did he undertake that? We don't know. We have to look at the deed. That's what Swan says. You have to look at the deed. And so in that deed is language to relocate the railroad line. And from that, that is the only source we have to glean. We don't know whether or not Byron has a law degree or was a railroader himself. We don't know whether or not they talked back and forth to say, you know, that is only an easement. I'll give you more of an easement, and didn't put it in the deed. All the cases say we have to look to the deed, and the deed said this is just to relocate the railroad line. So it's important here that before this court, the first decision of the trial court was reversed. That's what the Supreme Court said. When it came back down, this was then addressed again by Judge Snyder. He did go through all the particulars and identify it met all of the, not all, but most all of the Swan factors. And he came down in the mixed question of law and fact that this is an easement. There has not been one single reference to the record of anything questioning whether or not there's substantial evidence to support the same. That burden is upon the appellant, and it's not before you. With regard to whether or not this violates federal law, that decision isn't before this court for the simple reason federal law doesn't apply. You'd have to look into the record and say, did Mr. Culp stand up and say, here's my federal license? No. Did he stand up and say, I'm federally regulated and I have to do these things? There's nothing before you in the briefing saying that he did that. The only thing they come forward with is Mr. Jarvis, a guy who builds railroad lines, to say, I'm assuming this has to be level one track. He doesn't say this is regulated by the ICC. What you do have is the undisputed facts that this is less than a mile. It's three-quarter section of track. Cut off on the north, cut off on the south. They can't even get a full-size train on it. This is not interstate commerce. Federal law doesn't apply. Even if...
It's not connected to any other rail system either, is it?
No, no. It used to be part of the trunk that went on the east side of Lake Whatcom. Mr. Culp lost a lawsuit with VHV Culp, so the north, going out to the north, was cut off. He lost another one to the south, so that was cut off, and it's been cut off for decades. And regardless, there's no showing that whatever clarification Judge Snyder put forth in the decree had any impact upon their actual ability to fix the rail line. There's no showing that, even if there was federal jurisdiction, we say there isn't, there's no showing that somehow that impedes their ability to comply with the federal law. Also, with regard to res judicata, I think that's relatively straightforward, and you touched upon it. The key here is this is not a consent decree. What was not disclosed to you is it was remanded. All parties briefed. They briefed multiple times. They briefed all aspects of it. And they came back and they briefed the Byron deed back to Judge Swedberg. It wasn't where they just said, okay, let's make a deal. No, they went and spent more money on more attorney's fees, briefed it, and got an order. This is an order, and the successor's name.
We don't have any of that briefing in the record, do we?
I thought I had included it, and yes, they were. If you look at the most recent additions to the record, I did include portions of Sam Peach's briefing back to Judge Swedberg to establish that, in fact, on remand, all those issues were presented. Thank you very much.
I apologize to the panel if the opposing counsel can bring an expert to testify as regards the operation of a railroad in this section, cite over and over in the Code of Federal Regulations and testify that this is a railroad that's supervised and subject to the jurisdiction of the federal government, and then not convince the panel that it's governed by federal law. That's the status of the record in this case. Opposing counsel brought the expert, talked about how the railroad needed to be maintained consistent with federal law on cross-examination, admitted that it's a federally regulated railroad.
What about his other point that there isn't anything in the record to show that with the relief already granted by the trial court, your client can adequately maintain the railroad?
There is a part in the record, Your Honor, where I was very frustrated with the trial court judge that stopped our maintenance operation so that they could have a wedding on the property and let them.
Well, I understand that that order was vacated. And
because I argued it exceeded their authority in the trial court.
Okay, so you
Whatcom County Superior Court was running a federal railroad.
So you were successful in that argument, but with the final decision of the court, how is your client impaired from maintaining the railroad?
We have to give notice to the property owners in advance of any that we do, and if they want to object, they get to come into the Superior Court and have the Superior Court determine when and how we maintain the railroad. That is a huge impairment on the maintenance of the railroad. The argument that they get to reopen the 1970 case and limit it to whatever issues they want to have the court decide is foreign to me, is not supported by any sense of case law or statute.
What's also foreign, that is the concept that that order was entered without any order being entered that says it was being vacated. I have a real problem with that concept.
I objected strongly at the trial court level to the whole procedure. I objected to not giving notice to the parties. I recognized it was a double-edged sword because they were admitting that they weren't third-party beneficiaries of the consent decree and or the judgment and decree, that they had to reopen it before they could get the court to even address it. So we had some benefit by them making that motion. The procedure was completely erroneous. The troublesome aspect I have is to argue that the 1931 deed is an easement under the Brown case. It says it's a convey and warrant to the railroad, a strip of land. There's no statement for railroad purposes. There's not a case in Washington that would analyze this case as being an easement. And the troublesome aspect of what happened in 1978 and 79 is that Division One was absolutely correct about the 1901 deed under the status of the law at that time. And what was given to my client was the reversion and reversions in the deed. So I hope the Supreme Court would like this panel to analyze the 1901 deed under the present law, and I would invite you to do that, and they might slap my hands and this court's hands for doing that, but you were right way back, and you're right if you say it's a deed at this time. Thank you.